Halford and Brough.
Wow.
You need an army.
On the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
There is one main question.
Why are you guys on the MLS?
But also, how can the Canucks win the Stanley Cup?
Go off, young king.
What? Record levels almost of house positivity. What?
Go off.
Yeah.
What?
In the backfield, Jackson to throw on third down. Pocket collapsing, he backpedals, pumps one, sidesteps, a tackler, runs to the right. 15, pumps, fires, end zone, caught, touchdown! Hollywood Brown, and the Ravens extend the lead.
I don't know what we're yelling about!
Takes a snap, fires on a cross, spin, Jeff Pump, baby! Vegas touchdown! Carr to Darren Waller!
Loud noises!
Blitz is picked up, Jones is open! Jeff Pump, baby! Vegas touchdown! This time, no doubt! Put it in the W column, baby! This one's over! And a baby!
Here are your hosts, Mike Halford and Jason Brough.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Tuesday. It is Halford. It is a Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Sportsnet 650 studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Nephew Dom, back in the mix.
I'm back.
Welcome back, my friend.
Yeah, the Barrow wedding.
Did you enjoy your one-day sojourn?
Yeah, yeah, recovery day.
Yeah. Good. Greg was a very good fill-in yesterday. Greg Ballack.
Was I Wally Pipped?
Not quite, because you're here.
Okay.
But we'll see down the road.
We don't really have the option, so.
Oh,
it's true. We are not those beloved Yankees teams. That's what it was, right? It was the Yankees? Yes. Okay, we got a lot to get into on the program today. We need to look back on what was already the game of the year in the National Football League, and it might end up being the game of the decade or the century. That was unbelievable last night between the Ravens and the Raiders. Before we do any of that, a couple of fantastic companies to tell you about. The first, the fine folks at the Dulari family of Acura dealers. Three dealerships to serve you better: North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. We also need to tell the folks about Intercity. Now, that's the name of the company.
I made my order yesterday.
Good!
I made my order.
Congratulations.
There's going to be a lot of New York steaks coming to my house.
You went protein heavy.
I ordered steaks, wings, bacon.
Oh, I was thinking about getting bacon.
And salmon.
Oh, you went seafood.
You seem like a raw meat kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm not going to cook any of it.
Yeah.
It's going in a smoothie. Yeah.
I feel like when you go to a steakhouse, it's like, Mr. Brough, how would you like your steak? Mooing.
Yes.
No, I'm a medium rare guy.
Steaky.
I like my chicken rare.
Oh, yeah.
Rare chicken.
Bold move. Yeah. Not a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Give me that chicken ceviche.
So what are we talking about, you might be wondering? Well, there's this company called Intercity. They have steakhouse quality meals, all the finest cuts of steak. We always talk about the tomahawks because they're so visually stunning when they're out there on display. But a variety of other things as well. Your porterhouses, filet mignon, all that stuff. The website is shopintercity.ca. S-H-O-P-I-N-T-E-R-C-I-T-Y. So we've both gone through this process now. Ordering, super simple. Next day delivery, if you so choose. And then after you deliver, you're in fairly frequent text updates from the company letting you know when your delivery is going to arrive. So you'll get an hour window when all your stuff's going to show up, and then 15 minutes before the delivery driver's there, another text message.
Yeah, you can text back and forth with the driver. You can be like, don't you hate Dom? And he'll be like, LOL.
You can't do that. Everything else I said, though, was completely true. Visit them today, shopintercity.ca. Okay, what's happening on the program today? Three guests. We really stepped up our game today. Three, count them, one, two, three. Justin Bourne, hockey analyst, NHL analyst for Sportsnet, is going to join us at 6:30. On the subject of hockey, why don't we do the Regal Grooming poll question right now? Because it's a hockey poll question today.
Who are you most curious to watch in the Canucks preseason? The Canucks have a bunch of preseason games. Preseason is back, baby.
Woo!
And, there's got to be some reason for you to tune in to these games, which start, I believe, September 26th. So just 12 days from now. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of them. They don't count in the standings, but still, we came up with three players that I think a lot of fans are going to be curious to watch. and it's basically the new guys. So Oliver Ekman-Larsson,
yep,
this defenseman who used to be good, but then wasn't good, and now he's a Vancouver Canuck. Can he bounce back? Then there's Podkolzin, the rookie, mm-hmm. who's come over from Russia. And then there's Connor Garland. Is it fair to call him undersized? Undersized forward, I think.
Sure.
Who is a really good player, or was in Arizona and hopefully still is in Vancouver. And then the fourth option is just other.
That's
is
not there- a player. That's not a player name. There's no player name other.
Oh, he sounds good. I hope he gets power play time.
Make that abundantly clear. Not a player.
For example, someone replied on Twitter, Ulevi. This person wants to see Ulevi, or is most curious to watch Ulevi in the preseason. Okay. I voted for Ekman-Larsson just because he's going to be such a key player for the Vancouver Canucks. He's going to play a lot. I realize that Podkolzin is, you know, a lot of people are expecting him to have a big role, but I voted for Ekman-Larsson because here's why. Ekman-Larsson has to be good, mm-hmm. or at least okay, because he's going to play a lot of minutes and the Canucks don't have many options beyond him. Podkolzin to me doesn't have to be good right away. Like even if he struggles a little bit, even if he's a rookie, comes over, he's like, I've still got a lot to learn. That in my mind, that's fine. But Ekman-Larsson has to be good, and Connor Garland, I'm just convinced that he's going to be good. Okay. Like I think he's going to be. So I voted for Ekman-Larsson because I am most curious to watch him.
That is the daily poll question. You can check it out at Sportsnet650 on Twitter. It is brought to you by Regal Grooming Lounge, a 5-star level barbershop experience. Visit regalgrooming.ca for more, or just go in and see them. 415 Hornby Street in Vancouver. I believe we're going down there relatively soon. The ask has been made, and you said you're really excited about getting your facial.
Can you get a facial when you have a beard?
Yes.
Yeah, you can.
You can? Really?
Yeah. It's like
it goes right through the hair.
You still have like a face.
Yeah. Okay. It's like washing your hair, or to put it maybe in a different parlance, for you like a pet.
I'm more excited for my haircut because I need a haircut.
Are you still growing your hair? You wear hats a lot, so don't.
No.
You let it go long there for a while. Yeah. By your standards.
I'm bringing it back to short. It was too much. It's too much. I don't like doing my hair. Mm-hmm. I want to go down to Regal and go, give me a haircut that doesn't take much maintenance, but also isn't just a buzz cut.
The Johnny Unitas.
No, I don't want that.
We should get Jason a high fade.
Yeah.
Are faux hawks still
no. Definitely yeah. not.
Nice.
Remember when Murph had a faux hawk?
Oh, yeah.
We all had faux hawks.
Oh, I know. No. You had a faux hawk?
In high school, yeah, of
oh,
course.
Okay.
I never had a faux hawk.
Well, your hair is relatively long.
Yeah.
You would have a mohawk.
No, I had no hawk whatsoever. There was zero hawk.
No Tony Hawk?
Okay. No Tony Hawk.
Could I bring the faux hawk back? Do I have that much cultural clout?
If you go to certain parts of northern British Columbia, I think it's still alive and kicking. It's still there.
All right, let's get into what happened last night.
Anything that's behind
the scenes. You still haven't said all the guests.
Yeah, I know, we haven't. No, we went in with Justin Bourne, then we did the poll question read, then we started talking about faux hawks.
And Regal Grooming.
Anyway, put it this way, any small town community that's maybe 10 years behind the times, you could see a faux hawk there.
Okay, but I don't want to move there.
You could also, you know, I think the faux hawk now is also synonymous with like the tap out board shorts and
Manpreys.
White wraparound sunglasses, all the stuff that we know and love and is in the Kelowna.
Who else is on the show today?
Joe Fan is going to join us. Joe, formerly of NBC Sports Northwest, we had him on the show a bunch as a Seahawks guy. He's now moved over, like so many of our colleagues, into the gambling side of things. So we'll talk to Joe about, we can look ahead.
Gambling is the new athletic.
Yes.
Remember when everyone left the newspaper or wherever they were to join the athletic? Mm. Now they've joined gambling affiliated stuff.
There's all these articles out there headlined, "Why I'm Joining the Gambling." They're all doing it. Everybody is. Chris Johnson, he's a gambling guy now.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Fan, of course. So we'll get Joe. We'll look back at what the Seahawks did on the weekend. Then we'll look ahead to the Week 2 lines, which came out yesterday.
Here, I'm going to practice with you.
Yeah.
Johnston.
It doesn't matter what his name is now. It doesn't work here.
Johnston.
Yeah.
It's not Johnson.
He's still alive. He still exists.
Johnston.
In a certain aspect, you're right. His name is real. But in a certain aspect, I'm right. So 7:30, Joe Fan is going to join us for some NFL Seahawks talk. 8 o'clock, Thomas Drantz from The Athletic. the aforementioned Athletic Vancouver.
Old news.
Old news. Get on the gambling
that
train,
should
Drance.
Be their tagline.
That's the first question for Drance today is, when are you going to join the gambling? Because that's a lot better right now. So 8, Drance, 7:30, Joe Fan, 6:30, Justin Bourne. That is what's happening on the show today. Dom, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What happened?
Where do we start? Gee, where do you think? Monday Night Football. What a fantastic game. If you had only picked this up in overtime, you still would have been treated to one of the most improbable football games in recent memory. And that's, I believe, what you had to do. You were dealing with a variety of family-related duties.
Yes, errands and whatnot, pickups and drop-offs. And when you said that that might have been the game of the century inside, I was like...
But you got to see most of the good parts. What he didn't get to see, we're going to start the recap. We're going to start what happened with the last play in regulation. So forget the previous three quarters, almost four. We go right to the end of regulation. The Raiders, needing a field goal to force this thing to overtime with about 37 seconds left on the clock, field the kickoff, no timeouts. Derek Carr makes a couple really nice throws down the field, but it still leaves the Raiders with a 55-yard field goal chance with virtually no time left on the clock.
And you should probably mention that this is the first game, regular season game for the Raiders with fans in their new stadium in Vegas. So there was already an excitement level there. Here is the field goal attempt to force overtime.
Good snap. Good hold. Kick on its way. Yes, baby, we're tied. 2 seconds left on the clock.
Brent Musburger on the call. Yeah, I forgot about that. So to overtime we go. And this is when things start to get way out of hand. Just insane. Raiders get possession. And it is a seemingly walk-off touchdown from Edwards, who didn't catch a ball basically all game until late in the game and then in overtime. Only Edwards is ruled to be short of the goal line upon review. Now, while they're doing the video...
I knew that. As soon as he went in there and the official called it a touchdown, I'm like, that's coming back for sure. That's what replay has really shown us, that when you stretch out for the cone, for the pylon, your knee typically hits the ground before you actually hit the pylon.
The only issue with this, of course, is that it's ruled a touchdown on the field. And... because of, you know, the rules where if you score the touchdown on the opening possession, there's no chance for the defense to match. The game is over. Photographers pour onto the field. Raiders start to exit the field. But hold on. The game is not over. Of course, as Jason mentioned, on replay, Edwards is about a yard short of the end zone. So, hey, no problem. This is an easy punch in for the Raiders. All they got to do is get it over from what the, not even the 1 yard line, the half inch line. The ball is right there. But then chaos ensues. Carr tries for a QB keeper to get it in the end zone. Does not work. He's stuffed. There's a delay of game penalty mixed in there. Or sorry, a false start penalty mixed in there.
What's the one thing you can't do in that situation?
Just back it up 5 yards. And you could feel, the Ravens getting on defense, getting more and more momentum with every mistake that the Raiders made. And then finally, do we just want to let the audio take this one over? This is the interception in the end zone after the Raiders had already celebrated winning this game.
Carr out of an empty backfield looks to throw. Four-man rush. A Duffy hits Carr. The ball bounces.
Oh, yes!
It's
yes!
intercepted yes! in the end zone!
That's why you play. Anthony, that's why you play. You never assume.
Anthony Averett picks off the deflected ball, and the Ravens have a life in Vegas. They can't believe it as the Raiders walk to the sideline.
The pick itself really had no business happening because Carr made a fairly decent throw to Willie Snead, by the way, a former Baltimore Raven. The fix was in. Through Snead's hands, then the carom off the helmet. Yes, Dominic?
No, I'm pointing.
Oh, you're pointing. The carom could not have worked out better for the Ravens defense because it went straight up in the air, giving all the defenders time to read and react and get underneath the ball. So now you're thinking, all right, the Raiders are dead.
Did you have Seahawks flashbacks?
That was a very Seahawkian finish.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going
to the Super Bowl.
No, I know, off the helmet and the pick. With
No, just the pick. Just the pick.
It was in that position. You know what?
What I immediately thought of, and I saw a bunch of references on Twitter. So.
I didn't, because Russ was working on the Manning cast at the time. We'll get into the Manning cast a little bit later. Because it was funny, a bunch of people said, I think Martin Ego was one of them too, basically like, this is the most Seahawks game of all time. And I was like, this is, to be honest. So anyway, now we've got the Ravens with the ball back. All momentum, if you believe in such a thing, has swung the way of Baltimore. Lamar Jackson, who is he the most elusive guy in the NFL?
Oh, yeah.
Behind Mahomes, yeah.
I think he's more elusive than Mahomes.
I think so, too.
Like, I don't think it's by a large margin. And Patrick Mahomes, put it this way, it's not like Jason and I get tackled.
They're both slippery.
He's incredible. Yeah, I just think there's something different. As the kids would say, he's built different, that Lamar Jackson. And he was giving the Raiders fits in the fourth quarter. I just assumed that it was going to be Lamar taking snaps and then just dropping back to pass. There's nothing in front of him, then taking off for 20-yard scrambles until they got close enough to kick another field goal because Tucker's almost automatic. Not the case. Carl Nassib comes up with a huge play in overtime. So now we've got the Raiders seemingly winning on a walk-off touchdown. That's called back. The Raiders throw an interception in the end zone. Now it's the Ravens' turn for a huge turnover in overtime. Let's hear the audio from that one.
A sack. He's down.
Ball comes out.
Raiders say they've got it. Raiders say they've recovered it. And it was recovered. Carl Nassib was in there. He sacked him. Carl Nassib with the sack.
And that was the most inexcusable play of a game that had quite a few mistakes in it, I would say. You can't fumble there.
Well, the one thing that a lot of people said in the aftermath about Lamar Jackson is, you know, as elusive as he is,
got to protect the ball.
That's where a lot of
especially in that situation.
That's where a lot of his turnovers happen. And it's hard to say
because he's palming the ball.
Yeah,
but it's hard to say like take a slide or don't, because I mean the reason that he can run and do the things that he can do is because he runs with the football like you would playing pickup with your buddies in the backyard.
I think you have to duck and dive. Yeah, for sure. You have to expect that in certain situations, but there has to be that awareness on his part, does there not? I mean, there has to be. You're in overtime.
Totally.
Like we were joking about the Raiders. Like, what's the one thing you can't do when you're
after you've won the game is lose it?
Hold on. First and goal, inches to go. What's the one thing you can't do? False start, and the Raiders did it. Ravens, what's the one thing you can't do when you're fumble the ball?
Mm-hmm.
And they did that. So now the Raiders have the ball.
So we're still breaking this down, 6:18 in the morning. And it's worthy of every ounce of energy and every word we're putting into this. Raiders get the ball back. All right, new life. Carr's going to go get us a dub. They get into field goal range, trot out the field goal unit on 2nd and 9 at Baltimore's 26. Now, you and I were going back and forth about this prior to the show, whether this was brilliant subterfuge from the Raiders or whether they just kind of goofed this thing, because they brought the field goal team out and then took a delay of game penalty because it couldn't get lined up in time. Now, here's the thing. If you are galaxy brain John Gruden and you orchestrated this, like we're going for the field goal, we're setting everything up, then you set up that game-winning play brilliantly because Baltimore had everyone stacked at the line of scrimmage. Everyone in the box. There was no secondary.
They were expecting a run. And they were thinking this is 100% going to be a run, and they'll just try and probably place it where they want it or just hope to gain a few yards before they can kick the field goal. Should we play the audio of what happened next?
Zay Jones, walk-off touchdown, the second one of the game for the Raiders.
Blitz is picked up. Jones is open. Jackpot, baby! Vegas touchdown! This time, no doubt! Put it in the W column, baby! This one's over! And a baby!
So, after the game, after that Raiders touchdown, obviously, what an amazing way to open your stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I know the stadium was open, but this was officially opened. It was like, I think they were calling it Game 1 2.0 for the Raiders, which makes sense, and it's kind of funny, too. After the game, how much criticism would the Ravens have had defensively for, even if you don't line up anyone in the secondary, just be, have the awareness that that could happen.
Derek Carr said in the post that they had actually worked on that particular play and said, if you get this particular look with everyone coming towards the line of scrimmage on the defense. So I suppose there was an understanding that that's one way, a legitimate way to defend it, because it does look like a run. And Zay Jones is the fourth wide receiver.
Yeah.
It's a, I mean, you saw how it got executed. It is a bit of a gadget play. I mean, it's designed to give a look to the defense that they're all supposed to come after the ball. So they do deserve some criticism for biting as aggressively as they did. Like, mm-hmm. one guy that got spot shouted on it was Humphrey, who had had a terrific game prior to that. But he was the one.
He must have had a real moment.
Well, he did. You, I don't know if you watched the replays, how many times you watched it, but I focused. They focused on him on one of them, and the moment that Jones ran by him,
he gave up.
He just stopped moving.
Yeah,
right. He's like, "Well, this is in the back of the end zone. We've now officially lost this game."
My bad.
What a terrific game. Gruden, to his credit, or I don't even know if it's to his credit, but Gruden, in his explanation, said that the reason that they couldn't get that kick off in overtime was because they couldn't find Carlson, the kicker. He was warming up somewhere and they couldn't find him. I don't know how much I believe that one. Let's hear from John Gruden now as he tries to put this classic Monday Night Football game into perspective.
Coach, in your career, have you ever been involved in a game like this before where it almost appeared like you had to win the game twice? Can you recall anything like this in your career?
I died and woke up and died again, and I was like a cat. I had multiple lives tonight. I don't like playing like that. It was tough, but again, we did a lot of really good things to win that football game tonight.
I'm going to apologize now as we move along in what happened. By the way, I should mention this. What happened is now brought to you by Intercity. This symbiotic relationship between us and Intercity continues to grow. We're growing together. And they said, you know what? We like this Halford and Brough thing. It might have legs. So they're going to get in on the ground floor. Visit them at shopintercity.ca. Steakhouse quality meals delivered to your door. We've spent 22 minutes on the air so far. We haven't mentioned the Blue Jays.
We did this to them yesterday, too.
Take that, Toronto. 22 minutes in.
We even got a request from poor Sean in Delta, who texts in, can we please start with the Blue Jays? I have not been this happy since Joe Carter in 1993. Gurriel Jr. is best player in the world right now. The Jays are unreal fun. I have a fever, and the only cure is 3 hours of Blue Jays talk on Halford and Brough.
Well, you're going to get about 3 minutes. We'll do the next best thing. Big stories from last night's win over the division-leading Tampa Bay Rays. Vladdy Guerrero, Major League best 45th home run on a home run that I don't think got more than 6 feet off the ground. It was, I thought the third baseman was going to grab that home run. That's how low the trajectory was. It was a line drive home run over the left field wall. The Blue Jays are now 12-1 in September after an 8-1 win over the Rays on Monday night. It was another scintillating performance in which the Jays got a ton of runs. And now we're saying the Jays got another great pitching performance. And this time it was from Alek Manoah.
They've got a great rotation.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure about their relief, but they've got a great rotation to the point where we were even discussing, like, is it for sure the starter in, if it's a one-game wild card playoff?
Robbie Ray?
Is it for sure Robbie Ray?
I mean, he's had such a good year.
I think it is.
Yeah.
But put it this way, the fact that the Jays have options beyond him where you're kind of like, eh, like Manoah has been unhittable at times.
Yeah, smaller sample size than Ryu and Robbie Ray, who would be the first two guys that you would think. But,
and let's be honest, you're not going to put Manoah in that situation. He's still very young.
But you are right. Manoah has been nails almost every time out. So if they were to advance beyond the one-game wild card and get into a series, all of a sudden you're looking at the Jays and saying, this is a very, very scary team because we know the bats are going to come alive. Mm-hmm. So many people have pointed out that their number 7, 8, 9 hitters are knocking the cover off the ball right now.
It would be nice if they could actually get a little more distance between them and the non-playoff spot in the standings, just because then they would be able to pick and choose their starters a little bit better. Like, well, let's say they have a key game. Mm-hmm. Let's say their last game of the season means something, right?
Yeah.
You might have to fiddle with your rotation a little bit. And then if you get into the playoffs, you might not have your ideal guy there.
By the way, since we're on the subject of baseball, I think I'll tell you this ahead of time. You're going to need to learn who plays for the San Francisco Giants.
Okay.
Because they clinched.
Is it Will Clark still?
No, he's retired.
Okay.
He's also exceptionally old now. It'll be very difficult for him to play. Mm-hmm. Although not difficult for him to box. We'll get into that later. The Giants were the first team in Major League Baseball to book a playoff spot. They did it last night.
Where are the Padres in the standings?
Well, it was supposed to be an NL West battle between the Padres and the Doyers. That was what everyone was ready for at the start of the year. And then the Giants said, we got a bunch of old guys that you forgot about, like Evan Longoria. Mm-hmm. And they have now ascended to become the best team in baseball. First team to clinch a playoff spot. They did it last night. Okay. That is what happened last night. All apologies to the stories that we didn't get to, but we'll do it later on. Coming up, we're going to get back into the world of hockey with Justin Bourne, NHL analyst from Sportsnet. It's all right here. Don't go anywhere. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet, 650. On a Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Dom is currently efforting Justin Bourne. I almost called him Jason Bourne. That would be a get. Justin Bourne, still a good bet. From Sportsnet, NHL analyst. He's got a piece out, Three Up, Three Down, which talks about three teams or things that he thinks are on the rise and three teams or things that he thinks are on the decline. The Canucks are on the rise, according to Bourne. So hopefully we can get him on the phone to talk to him. Friendly reminder that this hour of Halford and Bruff is brought to you by the official automotive dealer of the Halford and Bruff Show, the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Visit your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Also brought to you by Intercity. The morning show brought to you by Shop Intercity, S-H-O-P, Intercity.ca. You can order steakhouse quality meals, steaks, seafood, all of it delivered right to your doorstep in Greater Vancouver.
Our poll question this morning, who are you most curious to watch in the Canucks preseason, which gets underway September 26th? Is it Ekman Larson, Podkolzin, Connor Garland, or some other player? There's been over 300 votes on this one already. Podkolzin is winning the poll at 57%. 27% say Ekman Larson, 15% Garland. And I think we've hit the big three there because only 1.5% of people are saying it's some other player. Now,
Brad Hunt.
Table Saw James texted in and said, my vote is for Hughes and Pettersson because then I know they'll be playing regular season games. Yeah, if they're playing in the preseason, they've been signed to contracts.
Just wait. That you know, that's an interesting one, partly from a media perspective, because when you do your training camp previews, you know, the really easy story to write is, well, the biggest focus on this training camp is who's not here. And then there's, you know,
that's a good TV stand-up, actually.
There's the TV guy doing his stand-up in front of the empty locker stalls. That's always a good visual, too. But that could end up being the biggest story of training camp, is if Hughes and Pettersson aren't there.
Yeah, if they're not signed, it will be.
Because no one likes opening. The opening day of camp is largely ceremonial, and you go through the media car wash. And for those that don't know what that is, you sit down with all your affiliates. So you do like the radio side, the television side, and you do your stock answers and you take pictures and you smile into the camera. It's ceremonial, but it does mean something because it signifies that things are about to get underway. You need to go through all these things because you got to get down to the business of playing hockey now.
Well, Travis Green, the head coach, has also said that something along the lines of Hughes and Petey know how important training camp is. And I expect them to be there.
To the phone lines we go. Happy to have our next guest on the program. You know his work from Sportsnet. It's NHL analyst Justin Bourne here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Bourne?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Things are well. We wanted to bring you on because we're trying to dive back into the hockey talk. We also spent about a good half hour this morning just breaking down Monday Night Football, which was amazing. But our poll question today is Canucks related, and your latest on sportsnet.ca, also Canucks related. You're three up, three down. You have the Canucks as one of your up teams. Can you give our listeners this unbridled sense of optimism that you have? Why are you up? Why are the Canucks up in your three up, three down?
Well, I did this crazy thing where I looked at the roster and I said, hey, that's a pretty good team. You know, like, I think we get so tied up in, you know, how the season went before. And, you know, I just think everything that could go wrong did go wrong for the Canucks last season. And, you know, the addition to Connor Garland is not a small one. Whatever you think about Ekman-Larsson on the fancy stats front or his long-term contract, he's a better defenseman than the Canucks have. You know, like, that is an improvement at a position on defense. So you add a couple of good pieces. You get a little bit older with guys like Pettersson and Hughes, who I, by the way, for the purposes of this, I'm counting as on the team and playing. You know, those guys get a little bit older. Besser's prime age. Like, I don't know. There's just a lot of good talent there, and they're in a pretty soft division. So they finished 7th of 7 in the Canadian division. There's no way they're that bad again.
No, I think a lot of Canucks fans are very excited, especially about the forward group. With the addition of Garland and Podkolzin, it just, number one, it adds something to the group, but also, Bourne, are you in a windstorm or something like that? What's
sorry,
what's going on?
I am outdoors. I will try to seek shelter.
With the addition of Connor Garland and Podkolzin, what it does is it not only adds those players, but it either slots down or entirely out of the lineup players that were playing up in the lineup too high. For example, if Tanner Pearson is on the second line, you're kind of like, all right, he can survive there. But if he's on the third line, you like that player on that line. And I would say the same about Tyler Motte, who's occasionally played up the lineup up to the second or third line. But if he's on the fourth line, you like that. And they got rid of a lot of the dead weight this offseason.
Yeah.
They had to take on the Ekman-Larsson contract, but a lot of the dead weight, the frustrating players too, like Virtanen, they're all gone.
Yeah, there's a real element of addition by subtraction, but I really like the point about pushing guys into places in the lineup where they fit. You know, Hoglander's another guy. I you know, when I wrote about it yesterday, there's like 7 guys you can see playing in the top 6. Yeah, with Pearson being on your third line, you really like it. And then I really like Jason Dickinson. I really think he's a good low-line player for a team. You know, I like Tyler Motte. I think that Matthew Highmore actually is a guy who can contribute in the bottom of the lineup, too. I just think their forward group is going to be as good as anyone in their division. And then, realistically, I think there's a shot they might have one of the best goalies in the league. You know, like Thatcher Demko has shown that he can be a stud in the NHL. And there's, you know, the way he talks about his game and wanting to be one of the best, there's a chance they might have the best goaltending going in the division. So if they have goaltending and they can score like that, boy, I just don't see any way this is a team that's a bottom of the division team.
You know, prior to getting you on the air, we were talking about training camp, and it's the looming there because Pettersson and Hughes remained unsigned. And we all know how this works is oftentimes when we joke, like the biggest story in training camp is who's not there, especially if they're not, you know, signed to their deals. You've gone through this rigmarole before about what, you know, I called it largely, there's a lot of ceremonial stuff at camp that doesn't really mean anything, but also kind of does. How seriously and how important is it to players? Because guys are fit all year round anymore. It's not like the 60s and 70s when guys show up and it's like, oh, time to quit smoking. It's training camp. Now you have to be ready to go. But there is something still important about camp. How seriously did players take it when you were going through this kind of stuff?
Well, you know, I'm a big believer in the snowball effect. Like, I really like the idea of getting off to a good start and all being there together and, you know, really get the season going as a group. I genuinely believe that if you start good, people feel good, it leads to more good feelings, and it kind of feeds on itself. And the same is possible going the other way. If, you know, guys are holding out and grinding for more money, people start complaining about the dollars and cents and thinking about the wrong things, I think it's bad. Now, that said, it's not the end of the world, right? Like, if it takes some time to get these guys in and they're the talented players they are, I think the boys are going to understand, you know, what they were going through. There's going to be a little bit of a grace period here. It's not like if they're not there day one, the season's turf. So, you know, you want it to happen. It's ideal to happen. But again, you know, these guys are professionals, and I don't think it's going to ruin a season if a couple of guys are gone for a little while. It's different if it goes a month or two into the season. You start to feel like your wins and losses are affected, and, you know, maybe it's cost you games not having these guys. But before you get to that point, I don't think it's a huge deal.
Right, because there's always these breaking points in negotiations when you get to this time of the year. And we've seen it in the NHL before. I remember, you know, I think it was Jamie Benn missed a handful of regular season games before he finally got his taken care of. I remember Johnny Gaudreau walking it right up to the start of the regular season, and then he jumped in the lineup. So it's not as if missing training camp is going to kill these guys in terms of prep, but the Canucks are in a unique position because of what we've all talked about earlier. Last season wasn't just bad. It was epically bad, like to the point where guys were asking out and got their wishes. Everyone, you know, and they can't even use the stock cliche of we want to flush last season. Like Travis Green has said, we want to remember last season for how lousy it was. Now, the risk with that is that if you get off to a similarly bad start, guys are like, oh, I remember this feeling because I had it last season. So there is something to be said for getting off to a really good start this year.
No, that's a really good point, too, is that like – you know, I had the whole flush last season, remember last season, whatever. You know, players want to believe that this year is different.
Sure.
And, you know, they have to see that it's different and feel that it's different. And if it gets off and it's the same, you fall right back into the old habits. Like, oh, nothing's changed. You know, we're still this team. So, man, it's a big year for vibes for Canucks, which is a weird thing to say because we're supposed to pretend that doesn't exist and it's all robots playing. But, you know, this is a big time for Jim Benning, right? Like, it's not just getting these guys at good numbers. It's getting them in the lineup and getting this season going. You know, I think he has a chance to look like a very good GM if this year goes well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he made a huge move, and if all of a sudden the team is good, he can look like a bit of a hero. But I think if it falls apart with Petey and this bleeds into the season and they're missing games, we may not change our opinion of Jim Benning, which is, I would say generally is not an awesome opinion right now.
It is a very high stakes season. That's for sure. Like if it goes well, awesome. Keep going. If it doesn't, it's impossible to not see major changes organizationally for the Canucks. I want to ask you a quick question, and it's going to rely on some of your coaching experience. The Canucks have a new assistant coach by the name of Brad Shaw, and he is a defensive specialist by all accounts. The Canucks were horrific defensively last season. They made it so hard on their goalies. They've got a few new defensemen coming in. But I'm just wondering, if Travis Green wanted to tweak the system a little bit to make it easier on his goalies, what are some of the things that he could do, and what are some of the trade-offs that those changes would, I guess, involve?
Well, I think you would look at more of a New York Islanders model where you'd be less concerned about the opposing team having possession in your zone and more concerned about making sure they don't get to the front of the net and to get those high danger scoring chances. So, you know, on 50-50 pucks, if your defensemen are in front of the net, there's a loose puck in the corner, it's kind of a 50-50 race, you would pull back. You would kind of concede that first touch and just make sure you're on the right side of the guy, you know, more often than not until you get to about 60-40 that you're going to get to it. And that concedes zone time, which people don't love. But at the end of the day, for the goaltenders, boy, it sure helps them out a lot because all of a sudden they don't have these 50-50 battles lost, which results in a guy basically coming in uncontested or an odd man rush in a low play. So, you know, being more conservative in terms of risk-taking. And then, you know, with your wingers, there's a couple options of how you want them to play in the D zone. Some guys, as soon as the D get a touch, they'll fly the zone in hopes of pulling the other team's defense out of the zone and kind of leaving more room for the team to break out, which is great. But then you've got someone who's flown the zone. So you would be conservative there, too, if you wanted to focus on defense and say, no, we're going to make sure that we stay on the right side of the puck at all times, support the puck low. It's just being more conservative. And I would say you play in traffic more and in your own zone more, but your goaltenders will see less dangerous chances against. If I'm the Canucks, I don't want to do that. We have a great goaltender. You know, we have a great goaltender. We can score. Make teams defend against us and trust that Demko is going to be above average. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the way to go for them to tuck into a conservative shell.
Bourne, you're the best, buddy. Thanks a lot for doing this today. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of this week. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bourne. Justin Bourne from Sportsnet here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Friendly reminder, this show is brought to you by the Dallara family of Acura dealers. Check out their line of vehicles today at all three dealerships. Go to all three in one day. Make it a day. Go check out the RDX or what I'm driving right now, the TLX, the 2021. It is a fantastic ride, but check it out for yourself. Experience the Dallara difference today.
The official financial sponsor of Halford and Brough is ZLC Financial. Whether you're nearing retirement and looking for consistent income, or you're in another situation in your life, whatever the situation, ZLC's advisors will work with you to align your financial future. To learn more, visit ZLC.net. And remember, advice is only as good as the person you ask.
.650 on a Tuesday, Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Did we miss anything in what happened this morning? Oh, we didn't really get to the Sylvain Lefebvre stuff. That was also in the rundown.
Oh, yeah.
That was a bit of an interesting development yesterday. Columbus Blue Jackets assistant coach Sylvain Lefebvre, hired not too long ago, no longer a member of the Columbus Blue Jackets coaching staff. He was relieved of his duties yesterday because he did not want to take the COVID-19 vaccine. And with the NHL's rather stringent rules as they pertain to unvaccinated people, it made it almost virtually impossible for Lefebvre to do the job. And as a matter of fact, that's what Jarmo Kekalainen, the general manager of the Blue Jackets, said pretty bluntly.
He said, yeah, and here's the quote, per NHL protocol, he is unable to do the job we hired him for. Because you see, he has to be around other people.
Right. And if you saw, there's actually like a yardstick rule. I think you have to be 12 feet away from the players if you're unvaccinated. I think they made
that. Lefebvre was like, what if I was just in the press box yelling down?
That's true. Will that work? What if I was 13 feet away at all times? Maybe I can get one of Kirk Cousins' glass boxes and exist in that for the remainder of the year. But this is the second coaching-related alteration we've seen regarding vaccines. Rocky Thompson in San Jose, it was a similar situation, but Rocky Thompson was medically unable to receive the vaccine, but the Sharks had to make the exact same move because they said it's impossible to have a coach on staff adhering to the rules that are put forth if you're unvaccinated. It's just not going to work.
Are the rules different for players then?
Is it like
you're shoulder to shoulder on the bench?
Well, here's the thing. The rules for the coaches, I don't think were collectively bargained like they were with the NHLPA.
Right.
So I think they were a little bit more, do I want to say heavy-handed or strong-arm? But they were just kind of handed down.
Right.
With the PA, it is important to note, and I don't think a lot of people have brought this up, but the NHL, one of the things they did collectively bargain was that if you want to opt out by October 1st, that option is there to you still, because obviously when we had our first pandemic season, the bubble, and then remember the NFL having a lot of guys, do you want to take the opt-out? I mean, lots of guys didn't go, not a lot of guys, but there were some significant names that didn't go to the bubble and opted out due to medical reasons.
So what does it mean that they can just opt out, though? Like, does it mean that they won't get in trouble or they won't get sued or something?
Your contract is waived for a season, right?
Does it toll?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's
what it means.
Right. So that mechanism is still there. I just wanted to make note of that part of it because in the few people that wrote about it, we're kind of focusing on the coaching side of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, remember, we've still got, two more weeks until the season gets underway and they have to make this call. So you could see some players doing that as well.
October 1st is the deadline.
That's correct. So there's a lot more to get to on this program. We'll make an early call for what we learned. The Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. Get a hold of us at the show. It's your chance to be on the radio. Get your what we learned in now. What did you learn over the last 24 hours in sports? You let us know. We read your text. You will be on the air. 7 o'clock hour is open at the start. 7:30, Joe Fan, that's a real name, not just his occupation. Formerly NBC Sports Northwest covered the Seahawks, has now moved into the football gambling side of things, so we can take a look at the league-wide stories from a gambling perspective and do some Seahawks as well.
Here's what I want to discuss in the next segment, and I'd love some listener feedback on this. text into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650.
Yep.
I nearly did the lumbar thing again.
Dunbar Lumbar.
ESPN had an alternate feed for its Monday Night Football broadcast last night. There was the main feed with the regular announcers on ESPN. Mm-hmm. And then on ESPN2, Peyton Manning and his brother Eli hosted like a side broadcast.
Yeah, the Manning cast.
The Manning cast. And while the game was going on, they brought on guests like Russell Wilson.
Travis Kelce
was there. And a few others, and they just kind of talked during the broadcast. There was no play-by-play, from what I understand, and I'm very curious about this idea.
Of the alternate broadcast, you mean? We've talked about this before. New ways to package previously existing content, that we kind of know how things are covered. Is this a change? And is this a change we want to see? We'll discuss that coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.